bad high. It's just like whatever your reaction to it is.
Yeah, exactly. I find that a lot of it comes from like the inner, your inner manifestations, your subconscious. I feel like that's a lot of what goes on. Because yeah, sometimes I'll be thinking, I'll be in a bad mood in the morning, and then like I'll smoke a little bit, and then I will notice that emotion intensify, and then it's like a bubble, like it'll grow, and then it'll pop, and then pop in the good sense that it like disappears. Like it feels like a wrinkle, you know what I mean? Like, you know when you flatten out a wrinkle and then the wrinkle disappears when you flatten it out? Yeah, it feels like that. And I feel like I would not be flattening out that wrinkle as easy if I wasn't like already in a grounded space. Cause you know, I'm very like, I'm always thinking. So it's very hard for me to cope with some of the thoughts that I have, but it definitely helps me like compartmentalize my thoughts as well. Cause I feel more grounded and stuff. So, you know.
That's so cool. So do you like use weed when you do homework?
No. Well, sometimes. I don't use it with the intention of doing homework. If I get high and then I just try not to do any homework for a couple hours, and then once the high starts like going down, then I'll start doing it. It doesn't help per se. It just, I'm still able to function and get my stuff done, but it's like it doesn't particularly help me. But I know some people online who says that it helps them, like, function in terms of, like, work or schoolwork and stuff like that. I find that I write better sober. And then, obviously, you have to edit sober as well.
Cause,
yeah. If anything, I would say edit while sober. Yeah. That's, like, the most important part.
No, yeah, I feel like if you wrote while high, it'd be, like, really revealing. But I find that I do my reading. Well, I'm neurotypical, though, so I don't know how it factors in. But I think, like, I like to do my readings a little bit high. Because I find that if I'm reading, like, soberly, then I, like, feel distracted. Or I feel, like, worried that I'm wasting my time and I could be, like, doing something else.
I feel like I have to read while sober. That's actually an interesting experience. I'll turn back to that. But, like, I feel like I have to read sober because I already interpret things very differently from how words are on paper. And that's just, like, a thing that I've experienced my entire life. So I have to be as locked in as possible in order for me to, like, get the message as to what people are saying. But that's probably just because, you know, we're different, like, I'm neurodivergent and you're neurotypical. How do you know you're neurotypical, by the way?
I just feel like I am. Honestly, I guess I couldn't say that because I've never, like, been tested, but yeah. I just feel like I am.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if you feel like you, like, if you feel like you're kind of wasting time while doing your readings and you want to get, like, a certain experience out of while doing it, I feel like that could be, yeah, I'm not really sure, but to that, I'm going to say that there's never anything that you shouldn't be doing. It's always what you're doing right now. That's what you're supposed to be doing. So if you got to be doing those readings, you're doing those readings. You don't, you're not supposed to be doing anything else except those readings.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot this semester of, like, just, like, trusting that the way you're using your time is the best way to be using your time and, like, not questioning it.
That's actually a component of Buddhism. It's the whole impermanence thing, and it's just, like, you shouldn't be greedy to do things that, like, are outside of what you're meant to be doing right now. Because, you know, we're meant to be on this podcast right now. We're physically and spiritually, emotionally not meant to be doing anything else other than being here right now. And that's an approach that I think we need to start taking to everything.
Yeah.
Even the boring stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Because, like, nothing is boring. And that's the truth. Like, everything is interesting. Because, like, my grandpa has this saying that's, like, interesting people are interested. You know, like, if you're always interested in things, then you will be interesting as well. And, like, it's, like, always possible to be entertained. Like, oh my gosh, the other day, I walked to the bookstore from my house, which is, like, an hour and a half walk, like, along the highway. And, like, I didn't listen to any music or check my phone at all for that whole time, which is, like, rare for me. But I was just, like, infinitely entertained by, like, my thoughts and the things around me.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Did you get any books?
Yeah, I got Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace. Mm-hmm. Wait, have you heard of it?
No.
It's, like, apparently it's, like, the hardest book to read. And
Wait, like, why?
It's, like, really dense. I heard about it from this guy who's, like, really into philosophy.
Oh.
And, yeah.
That would make sense. What's it about?
I think it's I don't know much because I didn't want to like go into it knowing, but I think it's about like the mundanity of life.
So it's so dense, but it's talking about the most mundane thing.
Yeah, okay. But I feel like that'll be interesting though, because, and I think it's also about like something, overuse of technology, something.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But me and my friend are going to be reading it. And cool. And I also got this book called Tipping the Velvet by Susan Waters. And she was, like, this author in the 90s. And it's pretty cool. It's, like, about lesbians in the Victorian era.
Okay.
And it, there's, like, this cross-dressing, like, female performer that dresses like a man to mm-hmm. perform. And, like, this girl watching, like, falls in love. And it's just kind of... It's kind of cool because, like, there was this line I was reading earlier today, and like, the Victorian girl, she's like, it feels strange, but it's not strange at all. I'm just in love. And I thought that was, like, yeah. so well put.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I found out about that book because I, like, I heard some girls reading the back of it, mm-hmm. and I was like, guys, what book is that? And, yeah, I was like, that sounds so good.
Wait, that's perfect.
Yeah, and yeah. then I, like, started a book club with them.
Oh, wow.
And we have, like, a little group chat now.
Like, you just met them?
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. How long ago is this?
This is, like, this weekend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That sounds so fun. Yeah. I want to start doing that.
Yeah, literally, just, like, approach random people.
I need to start getting more, like, confident, I guess, in talking to people. Especially because I'm like, a very political person. I want to do things in politics and policy. Mm-hmm. I need to build those people skills. It's a bit hard for me as someone who already feels very out of place in society, but I think, honestly, if I don't think about it, I can probably do it. I feel like it's a lot of the thinking and double guessing, second guessing, mm-hmm. that really messes with my head.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, like, what I did, though, is, like, so I talked to them, and I loved talking to them, and then I went and I bought my book, and I, like, spent some time thinking about it, and I was like, oh, I have to ask for their contact. So it was, like, a weird little thing where it's, like, I talked to them, and then I left, and then I went back, like, a couple minutes later once I had worked up the courage.
Yeah.
So, like, it's okay if you second guess yourself, and you need to, like, spend a bit of time working up the courage, and then eventually you'll go back.
Dude, I feel like I just need to stop thinking about so much. So, like, I need to stop overthinking so much in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it gets in a way of a lot of opportunities that I feel like I could have. And I feel like maybe other people relate in terms of the second guessing kind of just kills something that was supposed to be good or something mm-hmm. that was supposed to, like, manifest way bigger than it actually did, but it didn't because you couldn't take it to that level, you know
what yeah, I mean? Because it's, like, everything that you want to do is amazing and you should do it. And if you're, like, something else is holding you back from it, then that's, like, whenever I do something that's, like, risk-taking, I consider it, like, I'm, like, protecting myself from the side of myself that's, like, critical.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'm, like, I can't let that side, like, you know, ruin my life.
Do you know that saying, you gotta kill the inner critic and let the cringe, like, be free or something?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. That's very important. Keeping the inner critic there means that you'll have no fun. You'll have no fun. You'll reach no interesting opportunities, but with the cringe side of you, to be cringe is to be free, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And honestly, it's kind of, what does it mean to be cringe and what does it mean to be free, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Because, like, when I think of things that are, like, classified as cringe, I feel like that's just, like, people who try and mm-hmm. like experiment.
Yeah, and trying is a very important part of life. It's a part that our inner critic doesn't tap into, because the inner critic's constantly thinking, like, oh, what'll happen if X happens, what'll happen if Y happens. But I feel like it's very important to kill the critic. The critic can still mm-hmm. exist, but he needs to have a backseat.
He, because he's a man.
Yeah I automatically associate that.
Wait, but I wanted to talk about like, with what you were talking about with Buddhism, like, in my religious class this semester, we were learning about Taoism, which mm-hmm. is kind of, it involves a bit of Buddhism.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really interesting how the whole idea of it is that, like, you pretty much do nothing. It's, like, inaction mm-hmm. is the goal. And I was wondering what you thought of that, like, a life of inaction.
Honestly, if none of my career prospects play out, I'm just going to go become a monk and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that it's very important sometimes to just do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming from someone who constantly does everything all at once in her brain. It's very important to do nothing because I find that the stress of doing nothing, like the like inaction, like people are scared of inaction, especially in our capitalist society. People are scared of doing nothing. People are scared of not having routines. But humans are not meant to sustain that kind of life. And I feel like the stigma, quote unquote stigma, I guess, around doing nothing is kind of killing our ability to just be humans.
Yeah, because I think we've lost sight of like our purpose on Earth, and it's not to like have a job and make money. It's just to like exist as a human, and there doesn't have to be a purpose.
Yeah, literally. And Buddhism really brings it back to that. And I think that people don't like the fact that Buddhism preaches that, or Taoism preaches that, is because it's just not normal. It's not normalized. And yeah, thinking about it right now, it would be very boring to kind of just do nothing and inaction being like the main purpose. But think about it this way. It's relaxing. It's good to know that everything is out of your hands, I think. And I feel like that's a very key part of Buddhism. It's like you can't... Inaction is your biggest weapon, I guess, because that means you're unshakable. And that means that doing nothing means you can't get your emotions worked up. As someone who's a very emotional person, very emotionally intense person, doing nothing is the most therapeutic thing that I can do for myself. Getting worked up, ruminating, it really hurts my brain after a while, because sometimes I just can't turn it off, you know what
I mean? Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah, so it's very important to practice the art of doing nothing.
Yeah, and I also feel like at some point, like, inaction isn't necessarily always doing nothing, because I think it's also just, like, letting things come to you and, like, going with the flow of that, where it's, like, you know, like, inaction could also be, like, you know, you can go on an adventure, and that's inaction if you do it in a way where it's, like, you're letting things come to you and not just like constantly like seeking out, like trying to make this the best experience ever. But here, I'm gonna play us an ad real quick, because we need to do that on this show.
The Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, SVSPO, offers confidential support, advice, and referrals to SFU and FIC community members, including students, staff, and faculty who have been impacted by sexual violence and misconduct. The SVSPO is a welcoming place where you can access support without judgment or assumptions. We work from a survivor-centered perspective, using an empowerment and trauma-informed approach that considers individual situations and perspectives. Please reach out. Services are located at the Diamond Alumni Center, room 014 on the lower level. Please reach out by email at sv-support@sfu.ca. That was sv-support@sfu.ca.
Okay, we're back. This is like an interesting episode because we kind of just got taken away. Is there any more education you want to teach us about?
I have one more topic. Do you have anything?
Wait, should we do the Gnome News real quick?
Yes.
Okay, guys, this week's Gnome News is actually a bit of an update from last week. So, if you remember, last week we had Gnome Bella, who wrote her first poem. And some people read it. Some people turned into drops of water or shards of light. So this week we need to figure out what happened to them. So all these gnomes that were water droplets and shards of light, they trickled and danced into the river of contemplative fish. And since the new gnomes were new to the ancient skill of being water, they caused a slight flood. The water pushed and churned all the way to Winoma's garden, and the frantic power of the gnomes pulled up all the plants and worms. But luckily, at the same time, Gnomega was testing out her new invention, a lightning-making machine. Without her knowledge, the bright white bolt zapped its way all the way to Winoma's garden, and when it struck the water, the combined power of Winoma's devotion to her plants and the lightning bolt's natural force turned all of the water droplets and shards of light back into gnomes. With us today, we have Gnomega to tell us, what was this invention going to be for? Why did you want to make a lightning bolt?
This invention was made for every candle in Gnome City to automatically light up at once. I'm not just talking about like candles from Bath and Body Works. I'm talking about candelabras. I'm talking about chandeliers. I'm talking about anything with a wick and wax. It just automatically, it just turns on.
That is so wick and whack.
Yes.
Wow. Thank you so much for your contribution.
Of course.
And I can't wait for all the candles to be lit.
Yes.
And that was the Gnome News this week. Oh my gosh, I'm actually so excited. Everything will be lit by the lightning. Before today, Bianca was like, oh, we're going to have the lightning bolt zap the White House. I was like, no. There is no White House.
So who's the political opposition in Gnome City? We still need to decide that.
Gnome City is just like a pacifist land. Like, there's no opposition. Everyone's friends.
Dream society. This is what peak socialism would look like, guys.
Yeah. Gnomalism. Okay. What else did you have to teach me about?
Oh, yeah. You didn't have anything else, right? Because I have one more.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So, recently I've been doing a bunch of research about nuclear energy, specifically nuclear power plants and how we can use them in replacement of fossil fuels, methane, stuff like that, to power our wind turbines and solar systems. Not solar systems. Electricity. And a lot of the research that I've been doing kind of stems in the faults of Chernobyl and Fukushima. I've mostly done Chernobyl research. I don't know too much about Fukushima. But it's a lot of the stigma that comes around the incident at Chernobyl that's kind of just making everyone, specifically in America, not want to turn to using nuclear power as a source of renewable energy, even though it is the most economically long-term sustainable option. Because I think it costs maybe $25 billion to set it up, the nuclear power plants. But in terms of the fossil fuels, they cost only like $1 billion, I think. But long term, to refuel the nuclear power plant with, it runs on uranium. That's why it's radioactive. I can explain a bit about how it works later. But to refuel these power plants per year, I think it costs maybe like a tenth of the cost of it to set it up. But with fossil fuels, it costs more than how much it costs to set it up over long term. So it's actually, so nuclear is actually a very good long term sustainable option for, you know, as a replacement, because as we know, the planet is heating up. I was in a very intense climate change class, global climate change politics, this semester. And I learned so many new things about climate politics. Canada is very awful at it. You know, America pulled out of the Paris Agreement, which is the most important climate negotiations that go on nowadays. It's very, you know, it's very intense. It's very sad. It's depressing walking out of that class to know that there's so many things that we need to do. There's so many issues going on with our planet that's our fault, but we have done nothing to mitigate it. And it's essentially because of capitalism that we haven't done anything, because it's way cheaper to keep doing what we're doing, keep letting the economy grow and grow, and then nothing. Mm-hmm. The planet just keeps dying.
Yeah.
So that's why it's very important that nuclear energy and other renewable energy sources take the forefront in not only our markets, but we need to educate the people about it more, essentially. So basically, the nuclear power plant works with there's three components. So we've got the core of the reactor, which contains uranium, boron, which are the control rods, and a moderator, which is typically like lukewarm water. So basically the uranium are very long rods, and they're like completely packed the inside of the core. The core is like a big cylinder, and then you fill that up with water. And then the control rods are hanging from the top of the reactor, and then they're like made of boron, which kind of stops the uranium from like creating fission, nuclear fission from reactions. So basically the control rods stab down into the uranium and the water whenever they want, whenever the people controlling the power plant want to stop the reaction. So basically once the control rods go up, the uranium kind of interact with each other. The protons just like start fizzling around in the water. And then when they want to power on the reactor, they let the uranium build up. And then it just explodes. And then inside of the reactor, not like Chernobyl, but it kind of just like mini reactions. And the fission powers the wind. It powers the electricity because while all of that's happening in the core, it heats up to maybe 320 degrees Celsius. It gets super hot. I think it's even hotter than that, actually. But then it causes the water to steam up, and then it sends the steam to inside a second component outside of the core. I'm forgetting its name, but it converts water in there into more steam. So then the steam kind of powers the wind and it powers the electricity because it sends it all to this turbine that kind of, it's like a motor, like a very large motor. And then it kind of just powers the wind, or it like sends it off to electricity. And if you kind of think about it, the only pollution that would come out of this is literally just water vapor. Like, and we're thinking about, hey, fossil fuels, what do they put out? Coal puts out like how many tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere per plant? I don't even know, but it's a lot. It's ridiculous. And the only reason why we are held back from these expansions is because of the steep price tag up front.
Yeah.
We're not looking at how sustainable and how long-term the benefits on the economy will be. Because can I also like diverge a little bit into our oil sector in Canada?
Yes.
Boy, do I have a piece of my mind to give about that.
Yes.
Oil is nowhere near as sufficient at sustaining our economy as people are led to believe. In my class that I was taking, the global climate change class, and also research that I've done online, the Canadian oil sector only brings in about $40 billion a year. And we actually kind of pimp out our oil sectors. We give them back $30 billion worth of subsidies. In 2024, we gave them back $30 billion worth of subsidies, like $29.6 billion worth of subsidies for using our oil plants. We give them money back for using it.
Oh.
And we give them whatever 30 divided by 40 is. We give them that much back in subsidies when our profit is only $10 billion more than that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And the way...
Whoa. We're getting a call on the radio?
Do we pick up?
Wait, yeah, you should pick up.
Wait, is this a good
thing? Actually, I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't pick up.
Okay.
We'll just let it ring.
Should.
Wait, maybe you should pick it up.
Okay, I'm gonna pick
here,
up.
Wait. Maybe I'll just yap and you pick it up and I'll turn your mic off. But yeah, we have a call in the radio station right now.
Just echoing your sound.
Oh, okay. Hang it up then. That's really weird. Someone just, I don't know, maybe a ghost just called us.
Alberta's calling. They don't like what I'm saying about their oil sector.
My heart is, like, racing. That was really scary.
Wait, why does that happen? Like, can people just call?
There is, like, there's a number for the radio, so I think it's, like, possible. But maybe it just didn't work.
That's odd. Anyways, yeah, if we actually switched out of...
Oh, my God. Can you hang it up? Wait. I don't know if you guys can hear it. It's like ringing right now.
Wait, I'm gonna pick it up.
Hello? Hi, who is this?
Here, wait, I'm just gonna play a song while we let that happen. We'll just listen to a bit of this.
Oh. Thank you.
Okay, we're back. That was just someone just called in. We actually have to go in like a couple minutes. They can't, but
okay,
or like in a couple seconds actually. But I just have to say, up next, so this has been Gnome City on CJSF 90.1 FM, and next up we have Connor doing Department Uno, lots of cool music stuff. Wait, is there anything that the caller said you want to
The caller address? Just said that my number for 40 billion was incorrect, but I was actually specifying that for the 2024. I think that was just for Alberta, actually. My bad. But yeah, he said that they actually brings 84 billion in the most recent years. I'm assuming this is a 2025 number. But yeah, and then he just said it was great that we were talking about, you know, nuclear fission and the stigmatization surrounding nuclear in general. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, I did not get his name. I should have asked.
Dang.
But he's a first-time listener and stuff. So.
That's so cool. Well, thank you so much for calling, and that means so much to have some engagement, to know that we're talking to someone right now.
Yeah, that's never happened to me before. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, okay, I gotta let you guys go to Connor. Wait, I'm gonna put on a different song just so that the timing will be perfect for everyone. This is Someone Egged My Car by Cryptozoologist. And yeah, this has been Gnome City. Have a good week. Love.
Bye.
Options.